Welcome back to another episode of A Tale of Two Boroughs, a Subway Series podcast. I am your host, Mike, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Carl. Carl, it's been about a week since we last spoke. It's been a fairly exciting wild card weekend or wild card week. Some interesting matchups ahead, some stuff that we definitely did not predict. But I guess we'll start off first. How are you doing? Has it been going for the last week?
Good. Life's been a little hectic, but it's slowing down a little bit. Had a pretty nice weekend. Hung out with the girlfriend's family today, so that was fun. It's a good time. Got some free food out of it. So, yeah, anytime I get free food, I think I'm in for it. So, yeah, I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Doing all right. Can't really complain too much. Can't really say it was a hectic week for me. It was a pretty slow work week, which I guess is a good thing, being just given the fact that I'm doing a lot of the COVID tracing in the school that I'm working for. So anytime that there's no real cases or anything that I need to worry about there, I guess is good news. It was a good week. Played a little golf this weekend. Hung out with some friends, drank some whiskey. We had a good time.
Not bad. I'd say the only thing that sucks about this weekend is there was no baseball.
Yeah. That definitely
how did they let that happen?
That was a downer. I was promised baseball every day for the next month. So I don't know. I don't know what happened there. But speaking of the baseball, I guess this is a baseball podcast after all.
I guess. What if we just completely just ditched baseball for an episode? Do you think people would be mad if we just talked about, I don't know, elk?
Elk?
I don't know enough about elk.
I don't know anything about elk except they make a weird noise and Joe Rogan likes to hunt them.
Yeah, I think that's why I said it.
Honestly, maybe if we just say Joe Rogan enough, we'll get the algorithm for all the podcast sites. We'll kind of just bump us up to the front page. Just Joe Rogan, Joe Rogan, Joe Rogan.
It might work.
We'll boost the listener base. But no, we are a baseball podcast, so I guess we'll talk a little bit about the baseball. And I guess not only are we a baseball podcast, we are a Mets Yankees podcast, so we kind of have to talk about the Yankees. I can't imagine you'd be upset with how things turned out with the Yankees. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I could not be happier. I am so ready to stay up until 1 a.m. Every day this week watching baseball. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'm in it. The Yankees convinced me that I am now in it for the long haul. And yeah, I'm ready.
Well, it was complete and utter domination on the Yankee side in game one, a 12-3 victory over Shane Bieber of all people. You guys just absolutely shelled him. This has got to be the worst start of his season, right? I don't think anything has even come close. It was 7 earned runs against Bieber, right?
Yeah. Previously this year, he only gave up a max of 3. And I believe he did that 3 different times. So it was the game started with Judge, kind of, this was the only way I think it could have happened was they got up to him quick. LeMahieu, single to right field, Judge home run. Start right out of the gate. You knew that Bieber had never had a postseason start, so there might be a little bit of those jitters going. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. He didn't get another hit for the rest of the game, Judge, but I think that was the most important hit of the series. It really set the tone for the Yankees are here. Because if Bieber gets a shutout inning and he's able to say, okay, we're here, I'm in it, I'm in the postseason, got my first inning down against those good New York Yankee hitters, I'm ready to deal. That could have went completely different if Judge didn't get out front and hit that home run. That was huge.
Yeah, and that not only set the tone for the Yankees against Bieber, but I think for the rest of the rest of the series or the rest of their postseason run here. And I don't want to say – I don't want to give myself too much credit, but – at the end of last week's podcast, I did say, you can pretty much count on Aaron Judge. He is built for these kinds of moments. He is built for the spotlight, the New York Yankees lore. So he came out swinging, and sure, that was his only hit of the night, but he really set the tone for everyone else. So you really can't be too upset about that, because the rest of the offense did the work. They scored 12 freaking runs off that very good Cleveland Indians pitching staff. So props to them. That was a pretty dominant win. The next game, not so much. I don't know. Was there anything else you wanted to say about the first, about game one? I mean, 12-3, there's how much could you really say other than the offense was absolutely dominant? Well, actually, you know, I think there is. Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole was the game one starter. So he went toe-to-toe. Shane Bieber had a really good game and got also set the tone for the Yankees pitching staff going forward. So shout-out to Gerrit Cole for getting it done too.
Yeah, that was huge. I mean, 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 13 Ks. Like, he was on his game, and it was like we said, you know, you can either – sure, the Indians have, you know, Shane Bieber, the runaway Cy Young Award winner in 2020, or you have freaking Gerrit Cole. And, you know, that's who he was tonight. So, not tonight, that night.
And I kind of tooted my own horn a little bit. I think you pretty much called that exact stat line at the end of last week's pod.
I might have called it like Bieber, honestly.
You might have went with Bieber, but you said Shane Bieber is the kind of guy that can go seven innings with one earned run and 13 strikeouts, but so is Gerrit Cole. So you nailed the strikeouts and the inning count right on the head. I can't remember off the top of my head if you got the runs right, but 2 out of 3 ain't bad at the very least.
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, but I mean, on the offensive side, like, it was guys that we were talking about being concerned about going into it. Like, that's kind of the main thing to talk about this game. Like, sure, Judge got the home run. Cole pitched a gem. But, like, Glaber went 4-for-4 with a home run. Stanton hit a home run himself. Gardner had been, you know, hitting pretty well the last couple of weeks of the season, but he got one. It's like, he's staying hot. Like, there are certain guys that really did well in this game that it was just a good stepping stone in the right direction for things to come. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like you said, game two was not nearly as pretty as game one, but I think outside of that game against Minnesota last year, that, you know, that back and forth, you might know the game. Like, you might've seen highlights, the one that ended with the Aaron Hicks diving catch.
Yep.
Outside of that, this is probably one of the better Yankee games I've watched in recent memory. You know, like, it was back and forth all game, and down to the wire, it was just a nail biter and, like, mm-hmm. incredible. Like, I was at a loss of words. I was freaking out. I was, like, yelling in my living room as loud as I could yell at 1 a.m. without Christina in the other room waking up. So, like, it was huge. It was a huge win all around. It. I mean, what did you think about this game?
I just thought it was so long.
It was
Oh my God. It was definitely very mismanaged by the umpires and the grounds crew and everything, with the whole rain delay situation. And, like, they definitely just waited too long to get the game started. Like, with no fans in attendance, there's really very little reason why you couldn't have started the game a little bit earlier just to get some innings in and not really fuck up the pitcher's momentum and their speed. But I mean, Tanaka didn't have a great outing. I know we're expecting a lot from him. He is like that big game postseason pitcher. So seeing him struggle a little bit was a little bit concerning, but you don't really know how much that rain delay kind of played into things. Pitching is such a thing that you do out of habit. Your timing has to be right. Your routine has to be so perfect for you to have any sort of success. So I'm not worried about Tanaka just yet. We'll see how he does the rest of this postseason. I know you mentioned that Gerrit Cole will be the starter for the first game against the Rays, and they haven't named a starter for the second game yet, but you would imagine Tanaka is either going to be 2 or 3 in that list. So we'll definitely get another start, maybe two, of Masahiro Tanaka before all is said and done.
Yeah, I don't blame him too much for that first inning. I mean, you know, for those out there that weren't watching the game, because not everybody's a Yankee fan out there, you all should be, but you're not. I understand that.
No, you don't have to be.
The umpires delayed the game for 40 minutes while there was no rain. So at 7:05, there was no rain, but it was coming. So they were like, let's just wait until the rain passes. But then for some reason, and I wasn't watching the game at this point, I jumped on the radio at 7:45 around when they started, and John Sterling was like, yeah, we're here, and it's, you know, it's not raining whatsoever. So they decided to finally put the teams out there, and then it started downpouring. So Tanaka's first two batters, he gave up doubles back to back with downpouring rain. So, like, good for the hitters for being able to hit in that rain, but I can't really blame either side. And then they took the then they put the tarp on the field for about a half an hour. So in the middle of his inning, he had to sit down for a half an hour. Then he came back and gave up a couple of hits. So like that first inning, I'm not going to, you know, hold too much against him, but he wasn't, you know, the whole postseason Tanaka that we like to believe in, that like he's elite. And it could have something to do with that first inning. He ended up giving up two more runs in the fifth. At that point, they had gone down, you know, actually that was after the Gio Urshela grand slam. So like that alone, I guess we could talk about that. Now, this was the best game that Gio Urshela has ever played in his career. He said it himself, between the defensive plays that he made and the go-ahead grand slam when down 4-1 in the fifth inning. And then he had another single in the last inning when they were making their comeback in the ninth. So Gio was unbelievable. And if you didn't watch the game, you at least watched the highlights. And like between the double play and the grand slam, like those were two major, major plays in this game that, keep in mind, he was released or traded away from the Indians. When the Yankees played the Indians in 2017, Gio Urshela was on the field on the other side playing third base for the Indians. And they said, he can't hit. Like, we have to get rid of him. So he went to the Blue Jays. Then the Blue Jays DFA'd him. And the Yankees said, hey, for $25,000, we can get you. And we think we can make you a hitter. And
they were right.
You know, for him to come back and hit that grand slam against the team that traded him away because he couldn't hit, that was unbelievable to watch. Like, I can't imagine how that felt for him. So, like, kudos to him. Like, he was the MVP of game two.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. That double play that he made, making that stop and then throwing a second base from his butt, that was a massive play, especially against his former team. I don't think anyone's going to call it like a Gio Urshela revenge game or a revenge series or anything like that. He hasn't been in the league long enough. He didn't have too much of a career to back that kind of stuff up. But it was a minor storyline, the fact that this is a guy that the Indians – didn't want. They traded him away. They got rid of him. He was like easily one of the worst players on their team, and they chucked him away, and then the Yankees just kind of made him into a superstar, which I think you can say the Yankees, what the Yankees do to young hitters, it's like what's happened in the past 3 or 4 years in Houston with pitchers. Like, yeah. Justin Verlander goes over there and just reinvents himself, turns into a Cy Young winner again, Cy Young caliber pitcher, just kind of overnight. And these guys are just ramping up their spin rates, and there's something in the water over there for the pitchers in Houston. But the same thing is said for these young hitters in the Yankees uniform, because so many guys, especially last year, not so much this year, at least not to the same extent, where you got guys like Gio Urshela and Luke Voit, Tyler Wade, the greatest player of all time, Mike Talkman. Like, these guys just come up here and they just perform. And I don't think that happens on probably 90% of the other teams in the league. So they're definitely doing something right over there. That's for sure.
Yeah. And whatever it is, I don't know if it's like a culture thing. I mean, Gio said in an interview, like, the one thing that he got out of the Yankees that he didn't get out of the Indians and the Blue Jays is that they simply believed in him. You know, like, I don't know what it's like to be in an MLB clubhouse, obviously, but when you have a team that's willing to put some stock in you and put you out there and give you the at-bats to get into a rhythm and sit you down and be like, we believe you can be a star in this game. You know, that might do something psychologically for him. But yeah, like going off of that, like those guys last year, a lot of them didn't pan out. And I have, like, this is a fair pod. You know, we aren't afraid to shout out when we're right, but in the beginning of the year, I said, I don't think that Gio is going to be the same guy he was last year. I was ready for Andujar to come take the throne again. Kind of, I just wanted like a comeback story, but I could not have been more wrong. I think it was like kind of one of the things like how I infamously say about Pete Alonso, like, do it again.
Yeah.
So I do have that in my back pocket. I've been very consistent with that with a lot of players. Like, I just want to see you do it again. And that was like how I was with Gio Urshela, but I didn't think that he was able to do it. So, Gio, I love you now, and I'm sorry I ever doubted you. That's all I got to say about that.
The real question, has Gio Urshela earned his pinstripes? I don't know.
I don't even know what that means.
We still got to find that out. got to win a World Series to do that.
Apparently, that's not a Yankee thing. That's like a sports thing to say earn your stripes.
Oh, yeah. That's a sports
thing. Like, I didn't know that. Yeah, like, I didn't know that. So, like, I always thought it was stupid, but I still think it's stupid. Like,
I mean, whatever. I don't want to say it's not a Yankee fan thing because, I mean, I listen to a lot of New York sports radio. So you do get the callers that come in and say, oh, like, I like the guy, but, like, he's got to earn it. He's got to earn his pinstripes. Like, it's – I don't know who started it, whether it was Yankees fans that kept saying it, and New York sports radio kind of ran with it, and now it's just kind of a funny jab to poke at Yankees fans, or if it was the other way around, where New York sports radio was the one who kind of instigated it, and then Yankees fans kind of adopted it afterwards. I don't really know. It's just kind of a funny thing to say. But, I mean – as a non-Yankee fan, I cannot hand out pinstripes. That is not my right. That is not my duty hand out pinstripes. But if it was me, I would say these past two seasons, Gio Urshela has at the very least solidified himself as an everyday starter on the Yankees roster. And I don't think anyone could take that away from him. And like you said, Andujar struggled. Even Gleyber Torres struggled for a bit. But he's just been the epitome of consistency for the last couple of years. Very dependable guy. He's like he almost seems like DJ LeMahieu 2.0. Like he is that kind of player. So I'm sure there's maybe a batting title in his future. But if not, he's kind of putting together the start of a very, very good career. I'm not going to say Hall of Fame career quite yet. It's only been a couple of years, but he's off to a really good start.
Yeah, no, and he is 27. Like, he's old.
That's true.
So, I don't know. I mean, he could be in his prime right now. That's, like, the time when players are in their prime. It's around 26 to 28. So, like, who knows what happens when he's, like, eligible for his big deal. Maybe he'll keep playing like this and earn himself some good money. But, I mean, as of right now, Yankees fans said that Giancarlo Stanton earned his stripes when he hit a walk-off home run against the Mariners last year in the middle of, like, in 2018, in the middle of June. So, yeah. Like, if Urshela hits a go-ahead grand slam in a wild card game.
Potential, you know, elimination game.
Yeah, you know, like, I'm gonna give it to him. Like,
well, you mentioned Stanton. You mentioned Stanton. Had a sneaky good series. I mean, that home run that he hit, I forget if it was game one or game two. It was, like, 440 feet. It was 116 miles an hour off the bat. Like, it was an absolute rocket.
Yeah, he would have killed somebody.
He would have absolutely killed somebody in the stands, let alone on the field. So, thank God there was no one out there to get hit with that fucking ball.
Yeah, but right.
That's a massive thing to see out of Giancarlo Stanton going into the rest of this postseason.
Yeah, two home runs in two games. Like, that's big. I mean – the bats looked good, and I mean, even the pitching was okay. Like, I know they gave up 9 runs in this inning, but 6 of them were from Tanaka, and you know, it is what it is. But the one thing going forward is the decisions that Boone made in this game you don't want to see in the future. I don't remember the exact situation. I'll try to remember, but there was the guy that on the Indians, Naylor, that he went 4-for-4 in the first game, and then he started off the second game with a double. Let's see. When he came up the next time, Britton was in the game. They had to bring in Britton early because they brought in Green early. And it like, you kind of just had – you were trying to do the math of how the Yankees were going to finish this game. They were going to need to throw Ottavino, Holder. Ottavino or Holder, those are like the two guys. They threw Green. They threw Britton. So they had to bridge the gap between Britton and Chapman, which would have been 5 more outs. So I believe it was the tying run was on base because Britton just got destroyed. Like, he was pitching well, but then he lost it. The Indians take out Naylor, the guy who had been 5-for-5 up until that point, and, like, people are making a big deal. Like, he's the hottest guy on earth right now. It's like, he just had a couple good hits. I'm not putting much stock in that.
It was one good game and one good start.
Yeah, like, whatever. So they took him out, put in a righty. So Boone – must have listened to the analytics. Like, instead of having Britton, who was struggling, he was a little wild, up against a righty, who the righty had great lefty splits. They brought in Jonathan Loaisiga. And, you know, you have Otto, who they don't trust too much, and you have Jonathan Holder, who has been in high-leverage situations. But you bring in a guy, Loaisiga, who has not pitched in high-leverage situations, when you're in, like, the 6th inning or 7th inning of
very close game.
in a wild card game. You know, like it didn't make any sense. Loaisiga ends up giving up the lead and only getting one out. And at that point, the Yankees are losing, and they had no choice but to bring in Chapman for six outs. And that's just like a tall task to ask of your closer. Like, he wasn't even coming in with a lead.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's when Gio Urshela made the double play. They went down 9-8. And then Carlos Santana hit a hard ground ball. Gio throws it from his ass, like you said, or from his butt.
Yeah, we can
pretty much save the game.
Podcast. No, he did. He did save the game.
Like, because then it would have been first and third with one out, and you're down two, you know, instead of down one. So the top of the ninth, you know, Gio Urshela, of course. Stanton starts the inning with a really good walk. Gio Urshela, it's a single. Somebody else got some base. Brett strikes out. LeMahieu ties up the game with a single. Gio, or maybe he led the game. He took Voit out in the seventh inning for a pinch runner. Didn't even steal a bag. He just took the Voit out. And when his at-bat came up again, it's like, well, we would have rather had Voit up instead of, you know, a pinch hitter right now. So, like, going forward, we want to see Boone making some better decisions, because he almost lost this game for them, and he got pretty lucky that, you know, Gio Urshela is kind of a god.
Yeah, well, I think I agree with you for the most part, and obviously you would know a little bit, well, a lot more about the specific roster decisions that could or should be made on that team. But it's like when you're Aaron Boone and you have a Yankees team that deep, that dominant, that full of potential, can you really make a bad decision? Like, sure, there are better decisions to be made. Right. And you would hope that going forward he can make those the right decision every time, or what we believe would be the right decision every time. So, sure, he can make some questionable decisions, but at the end of the day, are any of them really bad? Like, that team,
the Loaisiga one was bad. Okay. That was bad.
Yeah, not the name I thought would come out of his mouth, or the guy coming out of the pen.
Like, that was the one. I mean, pinch running for Voit. I mean, because if I think Stanton or Urshela was up at the time, if he hits a double in the gap, Voit's not scoring, but Wade would from first. So, like, I understand that one you can get away with. It just sucked. He was a victim of circumstance, because at that point, Voit came up again in the ninth inning, and you're like, well, it would be great if Voit was up here, or the eighth inning. Like, it'd be great if Voit was up instead of pinch hitting for Clint Frazier, which Frazier's still a really good bat. You know, he had a great year, but, like, Voit had a better year. So, like, you'd rather have your guy up there for his fifth at bat rather than Clint Frazier coming cold off the bench.
True.
So I guess in hindsight, that one's okay. It was just another questionable decision. But the Loaisiga one, that one was tough to stomach, because you have a lead and you blew it. And, you know, it seemed like he wasn't really playing to win today. He was playing to win tomorrow, which is weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I think that's definitely a fair criticism. But at the end of the day, they win the series. It was a little bit closer than you would have anticipated coming out of game one, but they get it done. Who else, DJ, but DJ LeMahieu getting that game-winning hit. You really would expect nothing less. And now you got a tough, tough series ahead of you against the Rays, and that's just the luck of the draw, man. The Rays are coming off a pretty easy series win over the Blue Jays, which I guess we kind of expected. There wasn't really too much doubt going into this one of who would really win this one. But it's going to be Gerrit Cole versus Blake Snell, that's another one of the, I mean, Gerrit Cole versus Shane Bieber was kind of that matchup of the decade so far. And it was just, it didn't really live up to the hype. So hopefully Blake Snell could provide a little bit more fanfare, a little bit more excitement as far as a baseball fan standpoint, let alone not necessarily a Yankees fan standpoint. So what is your confidence level going into this series?
Feeling good. Like, I, you know, it was probably going to come down to this regardless. Either in the ALDS or ALCS, who knows, but it's kind of just like fate that these two teams go up against each other. There's a lot of bad blood between the teams, and they're kind of built to combat each other. The Yankees have an incredible offense, and the Rays have incredible pitching. And, you know, against the Yankees not so great pitching and the Rays not so great offense. So it's like if they line up perfectly to like have a pretty good series. But having Gerrit Cole go in the first game, like I'm standing behind that guy. And after the way they played against the Indians, it seems like they're ready and they're back.
Yeah, I think you're right. And this is definitely going to be the series that my eyes are going to be glued to. We do have a lot of baseball coming up. From here on out, is there no off days until the World Series? No off days until, well,
if they go 5-7, there will be no off day. Maybe
there's a potential for no off days.
I think there's one day for travel in between the DL. Maybe not, because they're all there.
They're all, yeah. It would probably maybe travel before the World Series, but probably not between DS and CS.
Well, No, because I think they're in two different states. Like, I think that.
Oh, yeah. It's Dodgers and San Diego, but which is super far away.
No.
But
it wouldn't be fair for one team to have to travel 4 hours on game day and the other one not. So maybe they do give the day off.
True. Well, either way, we have a lot of baseball to watch. Even if it's not like the Yankees might have a couple off days. There will most likely be a game every day straight through until the end of October. So I'm pumped as hell for that. So I don't know. Do we want to talk about the Rays series a little bit? I didn't pay too much attention to this one. This one was like kind of it's what I thought the Cubs-Marlins series was going to be, where I guess the Dodgers-Brewers would be a better comp for this one. But this was pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, no, I think the rest of these series, like, we don't have to talk about too much. I mean, we can highlight quick. The DS is literally a division series. I don't know if you saw MLB post that today, and I was like, holy shit, what? Yeah. Like the Yankees and the Rays, both mm-hmm. AL East, and the A's and the Astros, both AL West. That's going to be a fun series. Miami Marlins beat out the Cubbies.
Unbelievable.
They're playing against the Braves in the AL East.
Unbelievable.
And the Dodgers against the Padres. So, like, we were right on some of these. We were wrong. I think half and half we were right and wrong. So, like, but I'd say, like, the biggest one, and we don't have to talk in depth, is, like, the Marlins showing up, dude.
The Marlins were the shock of the century, because it also wasn't even particularly close either.
Like, no.
The Cubs pitching really shit the bed on this one. And the Marlins still, in franchise history, have never lost a playoff series. It's
insane. I mean,
they are the opposite of the Minnesota Twins. The Twins only lose in the playoffs. The Marlins never lose in the playoffs. So, I didn't think they had a chance in hell against the Cubs, especially with those two guys going those pitching matchups with Yu Darvish and Kyle Hendricks, but both of them just not good showings from either of them. And that Marlins offense really showed up.
Yeah. I don't want to say it, but I kind of said it. Don't be surprised if we're talking about the Marlins, but I did say that my official pick was the Cubs, so I was wrong. But
yeah, both of us were wrong on that. And I don't think anyone would have – no one would have taken us seriously if either of us took the Marlins for this series.
I think MLB ranked them as the worst team in the postseason, and now they're ranked ahead of the Astros in the division series, so go figure. But they just got some guys that could play. And I don't want to talk about – the previous series, but more, this is more for the upcoming ones. Like, we're going to make our picks and everything. They're playing against the Braves, who I didn't think the Braves were going to make it. You didn't think of me either. Like, we had the Reds going strong, but the Reds got blanked.
They got blanked. In,
like, 20-something innings of just no runs, which is miserable. Nothing. So, pitching was there. It just wasn't – there was not hitting for them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that can go for both the Cubs and the Reds series. But the Reds were – that was very shocking. I mean, Trevor Bauer came out in game one and threw an absolute monster of a game. But he just – he got a little Jacob deGrom treatment. And maybe that's some foreshadowing for things to come in free agency. Jacob deGrom be like, hey, man, I feel your pain. Come on over and we can get through this together and see Trevor Bauer in some blue and orange next year. But probably not. But, yeah, just the fact that the Reds who – sure, they have the big talking point was their pitching, but we liked their offense. We thought they had a good enough offense to at least put a run on the board.
Insane.
And it's nuts. And I think the Braves pitching is sneaky good. They don't get a lot of hype around it. Obviously, you got guys like Ronald Acuña and Marcell Ozuna and Freddie Freeman and all these guys who can just hit and hit and hit. And obviously I will say that first game, that first Braves-Reds game was brutal to watch because there was so many opportunities for someone to come in clutch. Someone can play the hero. And obviously it was Freddie Freeman. Same deal. It's like DJ LeMahieu, Freddie Freeman. Who else is it going to be? But these two guys who get it done in the final second. So wouldn't have wanted it to be anyone else. Cause as much as I hate Freddie Freeman, I love him just as much. But yeah, that the Reds, that's a real tough look for them. That's real tough.
How many guys left on base do you think they had between the two games, the Reds?
The Reds? Between two games, I'm going to say, oh God, it feels like 30, but I'm going to go 12.
All right, I already forgot. But no, you're way off. You were right the first time. They had 26 people left on base in the first game and 8 in the second. So,
oh, my God.
Of course, the first one went into extras, so yeah. That also includes – no, they didn't have the guy in second starting the inning, but – there were so many times they had bases loaded. No, nobody hit a fly ball into the outfield. It was terrible to watch. I could not imagine being a Reds fan.
It was like watching a Mets game. That's what it felt like, especially against the Braves of all people, of all fucking teams. It felt like I was watching the Mets just make all of the opportunities and execute on none of them. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you think happens with Trevor Bauer going forward? Because I know there's a lot of back and forth. Like, obviously, he's probably going to win the Cy Young this year. So, it would make the most sense for him to sign his super long-term mega million deal this year just because his value is probably never going to be higher than it is right now. But he's also on the record saying he doesn't want to take more than a 1 or 2 year deal. So, what do you think he does? I personally think he should sign a long-term deal. I don't know why he wouldn't.
Well, I'll tell you why he wouldn't. So I found out why he's not taking more than 1 year deal. He told one of his friends, I don't know if it's another player or just somebody outside of the league like that he's friends with, that if he signs more than a 1 year deal, his friend gets to shoot him in the nuts with a paintball gun from 10 feet away. So it depends on how Trevor Bauer is feeling. But I don't know if $250 million is going to make you be okay with that.
Yeah, I'll get shot in the nuts and then go count my money like in the hospital. Like that's okay.
Yeah, I think he stays true to it.
I'm his friend, I'd be like, okay, dude, yeah, that was funny for before the season, but you have the potential to make $250 million, $300 million, whatever someone is gonna pay this guy. Like I think if I was his friend, I'd be like, yeah, I'll let that bet slide, dude. You go get your money.
Well, his whole thing is, I mean, I think that's kind of just like a side thing, but he thinks that, again, before this whole Cy Young year, and why it's an interesting point is, he thinks that he'll be able to max out at like $35 million for 1 year, 4 or 5 times, which will be more than if he signed a normal $100 million contract. Like he'd be getting more money. I mean, less security on the extra years, but that's his argument for it. It's like, I could still see him doing that. Like after this year, what team isn't going to give him $40 million for 1 year if he wants it? They don't have to lock into the long-term commitment. So like maybe you do see that. Maybe you see something a little bit over 40 for 1 year. Cause like it doesn't hurt the books, hurts it this year, but not 40 a year from Mike Trout for the next 10 years. Mike Trout's not going to be performing in 10 years, unless he does. Cause he's the greatest person on earth and greatest athlete ever.
True.
So like, but I don't know.
I personally would sacrifice a little bit of security for a little bit less of that short-term money. Especially as a pitcher where, sure, like he can get that $40 million contract right now and then the first game of the season blow his arm out, need Tommy John or something else, and now he's screwed. Like someone will give him $15 or $20 million for the next year just as a flyer, but he's not going to be making – I find it hard to believe that he can bet on himself year in and year out every year and accumulate another 10 years of $35 plus million a year every year for the next 10 years. That is so hard to do. People have down years happens every day, unless you're Jacob deGrom. But I just don't see that happening. So I personally hope he signs at least like a 4 or 5 year deal, maybe not make it a 10 or 12 year deal. And when the CBA kind of resets and maybe the salary cap, the luxury tax goes up a little bit, who knows what's going to happen with the next CBA. Honestly, the CBA might be more of a reason to lock yourself in for the long term, just because you have no idea what's going to happen. There might be a strike. There might be a holdout. I don't really know. So I would kind of bank on a little bit of that security coming off an incredible year and cash out when you can, because really, how much money do you really need? Even if he gets the 1 year, $40 million a year, he's set for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things. So that's just my two cents on the thing. Trevor, I know you're listening. So just heed my warning.
I don't want Trevor to listen to us. He'll like make a YouTube video shitting on us. And
that's true. That's a good point.
We'll probably get some views to at least see how bad our takes are. So true. I don't know. But he also has his business. Like he hasn't, so he's going to be okay. But
Trevor, if you're listening, sign us some Momentum. We'll sell out in a second. We'll be the official Mets Yankees podcast of Momentum Sports Network.
Yeah, I'm in for it. But yeah, so outside of Trevor Bauer talk, Miami against the Braves, don't need to talk too much about it. I mean, we saw how both of them, played in the division series. What's your pick for this series? Because I don't think it's as – maybe it is as close as we want it to be. I don't know.
This series definitely put a little bit of a wrinkle in my pick. I'm still going to pick the Braves. Max Fried is great. Ian Anderson, which we didn't even mention yet, he's a rookie making his first postseason start. And what was it? Eight shutout innings? One of those two. I forget the exact stat line. But Ian Anderson had himself a hell of a postseason debut. So they do have some sneaky good pitching. But at the same time, Sixto Sanchez threw a great game against the Cubs too. So the Marlins, they're not as desolate as far as their rotation goes as we first thought. The only problem now is they won a three-game series. They only had to have two above-average pitching performances to move on to the next level. This is a five-game series. You have to do it for at least three games straight or three games total. And I don't know if they're quite deep enough as far as their pitching staff goes to really get it done. And the Braves' offense is definitely better than the Cubs. I think the Cubs were a little bit overrated going into this postseason. They had the flashy star power with Yu Darvish and Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, where the casual fan will be like, oh, they got these guys, they got to be good. But the Braves have some legitimate MVP caliber names in that lineup. So I think it's going to be a much tougher task for the Miami Marlins. And I think I'll go Braves in four. I think the Marlins can probably get one out, but I think they'll come out victorious in the end.
Mm. Yeah, no, those are all really good points. I want to do it. I really do.
It's tough not to.
I'm like a Marlins believer now. I don't know what to – no, I'll go Braves. I like your Braves in four. You know what? Braves in five.
Braves in five? Okay.
Yeah, the Marlins, they've done too much good this season, to just say that they're going to roll over and maybe squeak out a win. I think they give it a – they make the Braves sweat a little bit. But like you said, the Braves offense, at that point, Max Fried will be coming out for his second game probably. That offense is just so good. They just have to get it going for three games. So I'll agree with you.
Braves in five or Braves in four?
I'll go Braves in five.
Okay. All right. Well, on the other side of the coin in the National League, this is going to be – the really tough matchup for us to pick. Actually, did we even pick a winner for Yankees Rays? I don't think we did.
It's just you can pick what you want, but I'm going Yankees.
You're gonna go Yankees. I'm gonna go Rays in five.
Yeah, I can't not.
I also can't not. So Yankees and how many?
Five.
Yankees and five or Rays and five?
It's Yankees and five.
Okay. All right. I don't hate that. All right. Well, the really tough matchup for both of us, as this is an official Padres podcast. Padres Dodgers is not the division series that I wanted. Not even close.
No.
In the same way that we said, whoever comes out of the Yankees, Rays, or that section of the bracket is going to go on to the World Series. I think this is probably going to be true for this matchup as well. Whoever comes out of this Padres Dodgers series is definitely going to make the, well, in my opinion, they're going to make it to the World Series too. So I'm very torn. I'm very, very torn on this matchup.
Yeah. Like at first, I do want to, it would be different if Lamet and Clevinger are playing, because that's still, because Clevinger's not completely out yet. I'm not sure about Lamet. I think it's Lamet. It's one of their other big guys. I'm just saying Lamet. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. Yeah, Denelson Lamet, right bicep tightness. Clevinger, right elbow impingement. Don't know what an impingement is, but it doesn't sound fun. They've both played catch, but they've both presumably need to throw at least one bullpen before they're ready to take the mound. So, like, if those two are able to throw games 3 and 4 somehow, like they get another extra couple days of rest, then I feel comfortable taking the Padres. But without those two guys who, I mean, Clevinger was barely there, but Lamet kind of led the rotation a little bit this year. Like, I have to go Dodgers because they just don't, they might not have the pitching for 5 straight days.
Yeah. Man, it's tough because I think you're right. Without those two monster guys for the Padres pitching staff, it's tough to bet against the Dodgers, especially because Clayton Kershaw put together a gem. I mean, he's another guy we got to see him do it again before he can shrug off this Clayton Kershaw can't get it done in the postseason narrative. Although he was pretty good last year as well, so he's getting a little bit better. But he's
just not good when they know it's coming.
Yeah. I don't know, man. But Clayton Kershaw, one of my all-time favorite pitchers, so I'm happy that he was able to put together such a dominant outing. It was against the Brewers, who were the team that snuck in by the skin of their teeth. No one really had any real expectations going into that series for them against this monstrous Dodgers team. So I don't know. I'm so torn. I could really go either way. Anyone, a Dodgers fan, could come and explain why they're going to win, and they'd probably be right, but a Padres fan other than you could come in and make their case, and I'd turn right back. So I think I'm going to go Dodgers in five. I agree with you in the fact that getting those two pitchers back make it a much more interesting series, but the Dodgers are just so good.
They're just so good. They're not back like they might be. Like, it's optimistic to think they'll be back, and that's why I'm going Dodgers. Like, if they were healthy and ready to go, I think I'm going to go Padres. But, like, that'd be like if, you know, Colin Tanaka, for some reason, wouldn't be pitching this week. You know, like, yeah. Then I'd be like, I would want the Yankees to win. I want the Padres to win, but five straight days, meaning that, like, you're not going to be able to throw your number one game 1 and 4. It's going to be 1 and 5 on short rest. Like,
yeah.
And both teams do have to deal with that, but it seems like the Dodgers bullpen sucks. Oh, my God. Wait. The Dodgers don't have a good bullpen. The Padres have a good bullpen. Just if you could throw 5 days in a row.
That's true.
Both have good lineups. I'm probably taking the Dodgers lineup over the Padres lineup, even though the Padres can hit.
Padres can hit, but the Dodgers can hit.
Am I talking myself to the Padres?
I think you might be. I think you're going with your heart a little bit too much. I don't want to overthink it. I do think it's going to be – I think it's going to be Dodgers in five. I don't think it's going to be a sweep. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be an easy series to win. It should be one of those that go back and forth, and I'm – this and the Yankees Rays are the two series that I'm very, very excited to watch. And hopefully they're on at slightly different times. You would have to imagine that they would be just for the ratings. You can't mm-hmm. play both of them back to back or at the same time as one another. So hopefully I'll be able to sit on my couch for like 8 straight hours and watch both of these teams play and just have myself a time. So I'm going to go Dodgers in 5, and I'm just going to try not to think about it too much.
Doing it. Padres.
Padres?
Padres in can't do 4. They can't do it in 4. They can.
God. They can.
Dude, how insane is Machado going to have to play? Forget Tatis. Machado is going to be the MVP of this series.
All right. That's a bold claim.
That's my
– that's no, also
– Machado
that,
by the end of the year had a better season than Tatis.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that without even looking at the numbers.
But I didn't look at the numbers either.
That's a bold claim because Tatis is a pretty heavy front runner for that MVP. But I don't know. He made that Tatis diving stop. He's going to be the crazy face of the league. I mean, if he's not already, he is going to be the face of the league.
He's crazy.
He's so fun to watch.
I'm doing it. Padres in 5. I'm doing it.
All right.
I got to.
So the only one we've agreed on so far has been the Braves.
And I don't even know if I want them.
All right. You can go with your heart with the Padres, and I don't think anyone will blame you. If you go with your heart and become a Marlins believer, I think you're gonna get some weird looks from the podcast, the baseball community. So
should I might go Marlins.
Go ahead, do it. I mean, we don't have anything on the line for this. But
Marlins in 4.
Marlins in 4?
Yeah, the Braves fall apart. Marlins take care of business.
God bless, man.
But we're going to agree on this last one. I think that there's no way we don't.
I think you're right.
Because since we started this podcast, we've been so anti-Astros. It could not. I think everybody in the world, besides Houston, is for the A's in this series.
Listen. The Astros stink.
They stink.
They stink. And I don't – I mean, I'm surprised that the Marlins beat the Cubs, but I'm really surprised that the Astros won this series. And what it – I mean, I don't even know what the scores were because I wasn't even trying to pay attention to the Astros this year. But
– I think they were close, but then in the last inning in both games – I know in game one it was really close.
Yeah.
And then the Astros kind of took the lead. Let's see.
Yeah. Game 3-1. One, Astros won 4-1. Game 2, Astros won 3-1. So the Astros stink, but the Minnesota Twins are the worst baseball team in postseason history. And I don't even need stats to back me up because they probably won't. But the Twins have lost their last 18 playoff games.
Dude, I have a buddy that lives in Minnesota. That's from Minnesota. He lives in Boston, and he's just like the nicest guy. Like I love him so much, and I went up to him and I had to hug him. Like I was like, I'm so sorry. Like you didn't deserve this. And
at least you didn't do it to him this year.
Yeah, like that's the one thing that he was like, you know what, it wasn't you this year. It's okay because I've watched the Yankees Twins postseason games with him like the last 3 years that they've played, or whichever 2017, 2019.
No, 3 years. It was back-to-back wild card games and then right, the division series.
Yeah, so yeah, all 3 years we've watched it together. So like, it was good that you know he didn't have to deal with that because I was texting him throughout the whole thing like, oh, they're lined up for the 4-5, and he's like, fuck that. So, but I cannot believe that the Astros like, or the I can't believe the Twins like forget like, can't believe the Twins like they're one of the best offenses in the league and they put up 2 runs so. Maybe it's a shout-out to Dusty Baker and how he managed that pitching staff those 2 games. I know the first game he went Greinke for 4 innings and then Valdez for 5. He went 2 starters, which was pretty interesting. He saved the bullpen for the second game and didn't burn out Greinke to where he could have thrown in the 3rd game if he needed it. So like
that's, which is so unlike Dusty Baker, by the way. I mean, I know the narrative with Dusty Baker on the Nationals was like he ran so many of his pitchers into the ground, and that's why Strasburg had such a bit of a decline, and it took a while for him to get back on his feet to go into that postseason. But That is very surprising, the fact that he kind of spaced out his starters a little bit, didn't overuse some of his – I mean, Greinke, that was their guy. That's pretty much all they had with Justin Verlander getting Tommy John, which I think the last I heard was a very successful surgery. He'll probably miss all of next year, and we'll see where he goes from there. I mean, at that point, he's probably going to be, what, 39 years old? Mm-hmm. So who knows? I'm sure he'll get another contract. I mean, he's still up there. We'll see what he has after that. But I'm just glad that the surgery went well, and hopefully he could have a speedy recovery, and the Mets will sign him on a one-year deal so we can make our World Series run.
So now you're off of the Mets again? Now we can talk
about that. we're still a Mets podcast too.
Yeah. I know. I got to give it to you every once in a while. But this series, the Astros are still a good offensive team. Like, they still have Bregman. They still have Brantley. They still have – Altuve hasn't been that great. Correa had a couple of big hits in that wild card series. So, it's not – they could still win this series. You know, the A's are good. I don't know enough about the A's, about their starting pitching and how they're going to piece it all together. But they did go to get three games against the White Sox. It's like they're not as dominant. They didn't win as dominantly as the Astros did. Is there any part of you that thinks the Astros are going to take this series and we're going to have a Yankees-Astros CS and I'm going to cry myself to sleep every night?
You know, this is definitely one that I want to make my pick from the heart. I don't want to use my small baseball brain to make my pick here, just because I don't have it in me to choose the Astros to win this series. I do think there is a chance. I'm with you. I don't know a ton about the A's. I don't know how they matched up in the division throughout the series, throughout the season against the Astros. But
so the A's won 7 of the 10 games that they matched.
Okay.
Up.
Wow. Okay, that does change things, because obviously they've had some success against the Astros. They know what they're getting into. It's such a weird year, because if you get matched up, actually that plays for the entirety of the divisional series, like you said. It's all in division matchups, so all the teams have played each other pretty regularly. They know what to expect with the guys that they're going up against. So I think that does change things a little bit. But I do think it's going to be close. I think this is going to be a close series. I don't want it to be. I want the A's to sweep them. I'm still going to pick the A's. I think they're just an overall better built team than the Astros are, especially with all the injuries and the lack of pitching depth from the Astros. I am going to go A's in 5. I think it's going to be a pretty close series.
Yeah, I'm going to go A's too, just because I don't have it in me to, one, watch the Astros win a series, or two, watch another Yankees-Astros.
But wouldn't you want that? I mean, given how well the Yankees have been playing and how not great the Astros are, like, wouldn't you want a little bit of revenge in that ALCS and just sweep them out of the postseason?
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that –
don't want to risk
the,
it.
The Yankees have historically played really well against the A's in the postseason.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think this season is about winning a World Series. This is not about getting revenge against the Astros and putting yourself in a position. Like, if playing the A's gets you the best road to the winning a World Series, you have to go for that. Like, you have to set yourself up for success. And not go for the storyline. This should be about winning a World Series.
Yeah. And like, you don't want the emotions too high against like the Astros with the Yankees. Like, I'm not sure like that if like they're too worried about like chirping over there and like getting in their heads and like fighting and stuff than they are about playing the game of baseball. Like, against the A's, it'd just be a straight up, like, there's a little bit of bad blood there. Mm-hmm. Not bad blood, but like the Yankees have not knocked the A's out a couple of times. Like, the A's, they want the Yankees.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think both, and this is such a, I'm not answering the question at all. Like, both do have risks to play against. I'm looking at it right now. So I don't know which one I want to play more. It'd probably be the A's for that reason. I just can't watch them potentially lose to the Astros again. I just can't do that. I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of how I might feel. That's so bad. The Astros in game one are throwing McCullers against Bassett on the A's, and Bassett had a pretty good season. I don't know why Greinke's not starting game one. I have no idea.
That's interesting.
And then Valdez is throwing game two for the Astros. So Greinke's not even throwing game two against Manaea. Mm-hmm. So interesting matchups. Two good throwers the first game, and then two lefties the second one. You know, Valdez. I think Valdez is a lefty. I don't know. So I'm picking A's two, probably in five.
Five games. All right. Well, that sets up a Yankees. Well, for you, it would be a Yankees A's ALCS. And for both of us, and for you, a Padres Braves. Padres Marlins NLCS.
Padres Marlins.
And for me, it's the complete opposite. It'll be the Rays and the A's and the Braves versus the Dodgers.
That's probably the more likely scenario. No, except the Rays. Like, it's probably going to be Yankees.
Oh, shut up. Shut up. That's going to be a good series to watch. If you'll indulge me for just a little bit before we end, this is at least partly a Mets podcast, even though they're still playing golf right now. There's been a report that came out a couple days ago about Steve Cohen. Obviously, his tenure is looming. As soon as he gets approved by the owners, he will take over for the Mets and most likely gut the entirety of the front office. And Mets fans have been clamoring, hey, we want JT Realmuto, we want Trevor Bauer, we want all these big name free agents. And supposedly, even though signing superstar free agents is high on his list, the very first thing that Steve Cohen wants to do as soon as he takes over in this league or takes over this team is to completely dismantle and rebuild the analytics department, which I was worried when they said, oh, free agents aren't going to be first on his list. I'm like, oh God, here we go again. We were promised this big spender and now we're not going to get him. But following it up with, the Mets analytics department is trash, and we need to actually have a good one to compete in this league. Thank God. Because, I mean, the front office is the one that makes all the decisions. And we can blame the Wilpons all we want. But at the end of the day, there are other people at play that are making decisions on this team. The Wilpons obviously have a lot of say in signing the free agents themselves, just because they hold the pocketbook, they hold the money. So they have that kind of say, but in terms of scouting and in-game analytics, the minor leagues, all that stuff goes through the front office, goes through the analytics department. And I forget the exact numbers, but I think teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox have a team of like 15 or 20 guys in their front office analytics department. And the Mets have like two or three. So that has to change if we're going to be set up for not only success for next year, but for the next 10 or 12 years even, because it takes so long for some of these guys to get into the majors and go through their arbitration years and their rookie contracts. Like getting these guys like to be like the Yankees where, hey, you're in the minors, we're going to bring you up. And when you come up, we're going to expect you to play like a major league player, not a rookie who's making his debut. So I think building that culture, building that department is going to be so crucial for the Mets going forward. And I'm really glad that report came out, because the Mets analytics department really is that bad.
Yeah, and that stuff impacts everything. Like I said, like with the young guys, like making sure the right people are in the system. But then even like shifting during plays, you know, where like you're going to have better reports on where players hit the ball. You're going to have better reports on matchups, what pitcher to throw in which situation, which hitter to put in. It goes so deep with the analytics these days with like, because I know like Boone doesn't make a lot of the decisions. It comes from upstairs. It comes from the analytics department. So you can arguably blame the analytics department for Loaisiga and not Boone. So who knows? Like how much analytics is going to play in the future, but I guarantee you it's going to be very important for the Mets to fix that, because that's just as important as, you know, it leads to a good product on the field.
Yeah, I mean, we could, and I think for teams like, think of a team like the Phillies, who have spent hundreds of millions of dollars in free agency over the last few years in signing Bryce Harper and trading for JT Realmuto and signing guys like Aaron Nola, Jake Arrieta to multi-year deals. And they have nothing to show for it. Like, they're in a pretty deep postseason drought. I think it's been 8 or 9 years since they've made the postseason. So we know spending money itself does not buy success. It helps, but it doesn't guarantee you success. But having a good analytics department, having a good front office, having competent individuals to make these decisions on a day in and day out basis sets you up for long-term success. So Steve Cohen is already looking mighty fine in my book in making this decision and putting this report out saying that he wants to start hiring the best guys for the job. And my only, the GM that I really wanted, who's the current GM for the Red Sox, is Chaim Bloom. He came over from the Rays. He was a young guy, and the Rays obviously have a great analytics system. They have a great farm system, and they're one of the lowest payrolls in the league and one of the best teams in the league. So it starts with the analytics. It starts with the front office. So having a guy like Chaim Bloom instead of Brody Van Wagenen would have been so good. It would have been so nice to have a guy like that making the decision. So I think Brody's going to be gone either way. I just don't know who they're going to bring in to be that GM role. I know Sandy Alderson is coming in for the president of baseball operations, but I don't know who's going to be the puppet master in that GM spot. But either way, I'm just so thrilled that they're going to start making some hopefully competent decisions and informed decisions about the future of this team.
Yeah, no, that stuff is so important. I got going off of that. One more thing I was reading an article about the Marlins the other day, because, I mean, and this might be why I'm picking them over the Braves, but, you know, I like that guy that runs the things over there. I don't know if you I'm a big fan of him, Derek Jeter. But apparently I was reading this article and had nothing but good things to say about him. It's like the first thing that he did when he got in was say that, you know, we need to work on the culture here. And that's something we've talked about with the Mets. And like he said, you know, does the culture come first and then the winning, or does the winning come first and then the culture? And he said in his mind, everyone has to have a winning mindset. So what he did was he spoke with legit everyone in the organization. He got them all on board, knowing that, like, this is an organization that can win every single day out there on the field, like through rookie ball. That's the type of culture that they instilled in the young players as they're coming up. And it seems to be working. I don't know how much you can, you know, give Jeter compliments for what the Marlins are doing. At some point, like, they're just playing really good ball, but the culture matters. And I just love to see that, like, because that's the kind of like way that I feel that, like, with the Yankees, it's like they know that they're going to win. Like, they know what it means to put on a Yankee uniform. And it seems like Jeter's trying to create that for the Marlins, and it seems to be working so far. So I thought that was a really cool article. He said everybody's on board, the rookies, the coaching staff, the veterans, like they all are buying into like this winning culture, the winning mentality, competition, knowing that they could win every day. So if Steve Cohen could do something like that, that'd be huge.
Yeah, it definitely starts at the top. We know that having that winning mindset is so crucial. And you know more than pretty much anyone in the world that I do not like giving Derek Jeter credit. He's one of my least favorite people on planet Earth. Nothing against him, just he was a thorn in my side for so long. But he was faced with a very tough decision when he signed on to that Miami Marlins organization, when he bought that team, or at least had a part in buying that team, because he had a team that was winning. He had a team that was right on the cusp of making the playoffs. He had a very good offense. I mean, he had JT Realmuto and Christian Yelich and Marcelo Ozuna and a lot of big name guys. And he was probably only one or two starting pitchers away from putting together a legitimate postseason, if not World Series run with that core. And Giancarlo Stanton. Fuck, how did I even forget that guy? So
he was kind of important.
Yeah. But he was faced with a tough decision because they were on the cusp. They were missing the playoffs consistently. So the normal baseball fan might say, hey, we're only a couple pieces away. We can make a run. But he sacrificed short-term success for long-term success. And I think he made the right choice there, if that report is true and that article is right, saying sell some of these guys off for what you can, bring in some young talent and instill that culture, so when they do eventually make it to the major leagues, they feel like they belong and they feel like they can win at the highest level. So I will shout him out a little bit there. Credit to Derek Jeter for building a winning organization. But the difference between the Marlins and the Mets is both of them, I would agree with you, didn't really have that winning culture, that winning mindset. But for the Marlins, I think it's so much more difficult to build that mindset because the fan base is so small. When you're only averaging 2,000 or 3,000 fans a game, as opposed to the Mets, who have pretty decent attendance, definitely not the top of the league, but good enough. It's a New York market, very passionate baseball fans up here in New York. So it should have been easier for the Mets to build that winning culture with going to the World Series in 2015, with having guys like Pete Alonso and Jeff McNeil and Jacob deGrom and Michael Conforto. Like this is a team that you can build off of. So hopefully Steve Cohen comes in, makes all the right moves, signs the right people, and just brings this team to the success that we've predicted for them for the last couple of years. So, I'm excited. I'm excited for next year. I'm excited for the postseason. I'm excited for the off season just to see what happens. There's quite a lot that we're gonna have to get into over the next month or two. So, should make for some interesting stuff. But that's really all I got. Any final thoughts from you?
No, man. Let's just go Yankees, man. Starting up tomorrow, you know, I guess tonight if you're listening to the podcast, like, let's just do it. Let's see Gerrit Cole. Just ready.
Postseason no-hitter?
I mean, I'm okay with a 3-run, 7-inning start if the Yankees win the game. I don't care what Gerrit Cole does.
True.
All right. As long as it brings a W.
That's true. Winning is all that matters. So, huge matchup against the Yankees and the Rays. Huge matchup against the Dodgers and the Padres, and a couple so-so matchups with the Braves and the Marlins, and the A's and the Astros. So, nonetheless, we have a few weeks of straight baseball. So, we will keep you guys updated on everything that is going on. We'll probably have a little bit of an inconsistent schedule, just based on what happens with these games and when these series conclude. So we will keep you guys updated. As always, our information is going to be in the description for our social media, our website, and our email. But thank you all for listening, and let's go Yankees.